Moving Iron Podcast is proud to be part of the Global Ag Network. The network is live, so check out globalagnetwork.com for more details and updates. Now on to the show.
Moving Iron in the 21st century. Hardworking people working hard for you and me. Moving Iron, time and time again.
Hello and welcome to Moving Iron Podcast number 127. On this episode, I have John Hawkins of Martin Sullivan. John, how you doing, buddy?
Good. How are you doing, Case? Good to hear from you, man.
Man, if I was any better, John, I'd be you, buddy. That's how good things
are.
I've
heard that for a few years, so I'm still waiting for that, but appreciate it.
Now, John's a good friend of mine, and any chance I get to get him on here, it's a big deal for me because John's one of those guys that I have a lot of respect for in the industry. And John's got we used to bounce stuff off each other back when we were both used equipment guys a lot, and now we both have different roles within the company, but we still have a direct tie to used equipment. So, John, as you look around here the first quarter of the year, what are some of your takeaways so far as you look back here through March?
Yeah, you know, I look at the first quarter of the year and, you know, see a lot of still a lot of strength in the market for us compared to carrying over from last year. Really a lot of new equipment strength. We didn't have as much used equipment as we've had in the past. So some of those sales have transitioned over to new, which has been good. We are seeing some building up of used inventories, but, you know, that's something we've learned how to manage through it. And hopefully learn from our shortcomings maybe in years past and a little bit more proactive with our management plan. So
yeah, and I would echo those comments, man. We take a look at what we've done so far first year. We've had our January and February were all strong months. In a lot of cases, they were stronger than we'd had the year before. And echo to your point, our new equipment sales have been up a little bit. Our used equipment sales have been up as well, but we're also seeing some transition, you know, into more of a used equipment a population that we probably haven't seen for a while in our inventory. So as we look and see what's happening there, that 12 and 14 model equipment's really starting to be kind of an Achilles heel for us. And I think if you look at the market, it's starting to be the same way. A lot of those pieces of equipment were the ones that guys got brand new in 2012 or 13 or 14 or whatever it was. And through the downturn, they haven't traded it like they normally would have. And we're starting to see that machines come in with some pretty significant hours on them. Are you seeing a similar situation where you're at?
Yeah, you know, we don't see quite the hours you do, just for the way our demographics work out with our farm sizes and whatnot. But we have some 12, 13, and 14 machines that, you know, I would say are, you know, we keep on thinking are S-Series combines. That's great. They are S-Series combines, and they're really pretty dependable now. But you know, what we see is that those machines are mid-life our combines. You know, we think of S-Series, we think of the latest and greatest and newest. Mm-hmm. Some of these machines, 12, 13, and 14s, are either second machines now for people or like I say, mid-life machines for maybe a third, fourth user that, you know, will make a good machine, but it's not going to be a premium like new
right.
machine.
Yep, and that's what we're saying too. Those machines that are coming in now are some of those, like the 13, 14s especially, do have some guys with some 9770s or something along that vintage that are looking at moving into S-Series combine or something like that, doing some updating, so we're starting to see some traction there. But to your point, yeah, that's exactly right. It's you're looking at some backup combines or backup tractors or something along those lines, especially if you find like a four-wheel drive. I've been seeing a lot of four-wheel drives that have PTOs on them that are falling into that category just for that cheaper horsepower, you know, grain cart rig. You can also throw a planter on it or a tillage piece or whatever it might be. So there's some stuff going on there. So
yeah, the good thing is those like you know, you're running the back of those 12, 13, and 14 machines, those S series combines. But what I see is they might maybe been to the shop a couple times.
Right.
They've been reconditioned a couple times through trades, and they're actually I think they're really pretty decent machines now and on the market. And you know, somebody can get some real value there if they decide, hey, I want to buy a 13 or a 14 model machine, because those 14 models when they came out new, they were pretty decent machines.
Yeah.
And I think they're just they might have some hours on it, but you're gonna see a lot of you see some good value there if you look at those machines.
Yeah, there's been plenty of work that's been done to those over the course of this downturn, and you know guys didn't necessarily skip on the repair part of it. You know they made sure that the machine was going to operate, was going to do what they needed to do, and you know they improved a lot of things too. Just like any other machine, as it goes down the line, there's always product improvements that come out and stuff like that. So those things always come out. So you do have a like you said, a solid machine that's got some pretty good reconditioning done to it over the years so far.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So if you take a look at what's going on now, we got all this trade stuff going on with China, and I guess they've put a date on the calendar, I guess, when they're supposed to meet. Or looking at calendars anyway to make sure they can pin a date down and some stuff going on. So that's kind of headed in the direction we need to have ahead in the U.S., the Mexico, and Canada free trade agreement that's coming out. That's pretty much been inked. Just got to get it ratified through Congress and get that taken care of. So from a trade perspective, it looks like we're heading in a good direction. We saw a reflection of that in the markets here the last few days. But the one caveat that's kind of hanging out there that could be a big deal for people is the weather. And so for like where we're at right now, Wednesday night through Thursday, we had about, depending on where you're at, 12 to 16 inches of rain, 20-mile-an-hour winds and greater, you know, down depending on where you were. So we had quite a bit of snow laying. We had a fair amount of rain before that. And where you guys are at out there in Illinois, you guys had just can't catch a break, man. You guys are actually going into the water business, man. You used to be selling some water somewhere, as much water as you got laying around out there. Because of that water that you've had, you had some fall tillage work that didn't get done. There are some parts of that area where crops didn't even get cut. So talk a little bit about that and what you see happening out there right now.
Yeah, that's the one dynamic of the market that, you know, unfortunately we can't control. And it would be really nice if we could figure out how to control that. But we're at the mercy of Mother Nature in the agriculture business, whether we're farmers, whether we're commercial applicators, seed dealers, equipment dealers. So we're kind of all at the mercy there in Illinois. You know, it has its own dynamics. We had really an early fall, or I should say early winter, and a lot of field work didn't get done because we did have a late fall. Crops got out, then we had early winter. I'd say probably half our work got done, maybe a little bit more this fall, and still a lot of nitrogen to go on. Then with that winter, we had some really cold, a lot of cold, which sent frost really deep into the ground. So right now, like I told Case earlier, we feel like we're in the spring mode. It feels like spring right now. It's starting to smell like spring out there. We've had a lot of rain here recently, but we still got to get that frost out of the ground. And we all know when we got a lot of frost in the ground, we get a lot of rain. We get a lot of ponding as well. So it's going to take some time. How that all works out for us, boy, I wish I knew here moving ahead. But let's just say we're going to have a lot of work to do, and it's going to be frantic and fever paced when it gets started here, probably in a couple of weeks, trying to finish up with that fall, at least some of the fall tillage, more than likely just with a lot of nitrogen. Now, the big dynamic in that is we really don't know if – guys are have enough time to get your nitrogen on, so we don't know if it's going to switch maybe from some farmers will switch more from corn acres back to bean acres because we're pretty heavy. I'd say, you know, 65-35 corn bean rotation. But we might be pushing closer to 50-50 here after this whole thing is done, just because guys aren't going to be able to get their nitrogen on.
Yeah. Yeah. Have you had a lot of talk about that, about switching acres? I mean, are you hearing more about that, or is it more of this kind of wait and see? We'll see what we can do.
I would say it's all a wait and see right now. I think everybody has their options laid out in front of them. They know what they need to do. The good thing is here today in today's ag climate, a lot of our guys are fairly well equipped, and they have a real good resource staff of advisors, whether it's through their certified crop advisors, whether it's through their dealerships, whether it's through their ASPs, you know, ag service providers, that they're giving them the options. They're telling them how they need to be equipped to handle whatever they need to do. So I think the options are on the table. You know, once again, they're just waiting to see what Mother Nature is going to say how the house fit, and, you know, I think it might come down to the day or the week, Casey, before they really know what direction they're going to go. But once they decide, they're going to go quick.
Yep. All right. So that brings up another point now that I want to talk about with you, John. And because of the planting window that we were going to have this year across the entire United States, I don't care where you're at. There may be a few exceptions where things are kind of humming along like they're supposed to. But whether you're in the Delta or if you're in the Mississippi River Valley, or if you're out my way or whatever it might be, that planting window is going to be short and tight this year. So high-speed planters, I think, are going to be a bigger deal than they've been in the past. A lot of guys have made that decision now what they're going to do. But with planting window the way it is, when they get out in the field and start working, I think next year that high-speed planter is going to start playing a bigger role than what we even see it playing now. So talk to me a little bit about how you see the ExactEmerge planter stacking up in there, as well as any kind of precision pressure that you're getting from either other dealers or whatever it might be.
Yeah. I see that that high speed market growing every year. It's taken a while to catch hold because it is an expensive investment.
Yeah.
But every year it grows a little bit more. Planter market in the whole, we couldn't trade for enough planters last year. We felt like we had the demand, but at the time of the planter early order program, weather was very bearish. The markets were bearish as well, and it just didn't work out. It didn't work out real well. Well, we did stock some high speed planters, and we sold all through those as well. So any high speed planter we had, whether it was new in stock or a used one, we've sold them all, and I think there's demand for more. What'll be interesting is how this the second user here in a few years, you start getting some high speed planters that are 1, 2, 3, 4 years old, and then you start taking those in on trade. I think that demand will go even faster and harder, just for the fact that expensive investment, new. They get a little bit of, they get depreciated down, they get repaired a little bit, and brought back the good spec. I could see the used market on the high speed being really strong in the next year or so. And you're right. What's going to drive that is seasons like this, Casey.
Right.
You just don't know. I mean, guys want to move. They want to move fast. They want to be able to plant their crop in 5 days. And the way they're going to be able to do that, with recommendations from their providers, whether it's a dealer or an equipment dealer or an ag service provider, say, hey, have a high speed planter. Well, unfortunately, that inventory is not out there on the market as much as we'd like to say. So it might be a learning experience this year, but I think it'll just continue to grow the strength for that demand of that planter.
Yeah, and I agree with that, man. We look at what we have now. We have, you know, like you said, our demand for planters is higher than it's been in the past, you know, 4 years, right? It's just been off the charts comparatively. The high-speed planter end of it is something that I think we're going to be able to push really good, and especially when you start talking about the ergonomics of what those planters can do, whether it's you know, the equal downforce across each row, or you know, the individual row thing is what's going to be even a bigger part of that, in my opinion, because now you have a variable rate planter on steroids, man. You can just do all kinds of stuff based on soil conditions or where you're at on the grade of the field or whatever it might be. So there's a they might be expensive, but the return on investment is pretty high.
Absolutely.
Yep. So there's a lot of stuff to be, and like you said there, we're moving into what this is be. See, 2015 was the first year for that. So they had we're going into the fifth planting cycle of that, and it's going to be interesting to see not only how that used market stacks up, but that second or third trade in. Now we start looking at some of that stuff. What's that third trade in start looking like, and how does that hold in its value?
Yeah.
And it so far from what I can tell, it's been holding its value quite well.
Yeah, I really, in the last 2 years, we haven't had a used ExactEmerge planter hit the lot. Once we trade for it, it's sold before it hits the lot. So I think that's pretty. That tells us what the demand for that planter is on the market with it being a used planter.
Mm-hmm. Have you had any guys that were strong 24 row guys look at that and say, you know what, I can go down to a 16 row or a 12 row or something like that?
We've had some DB guys that look at that and say we can go down to a 24.
Yeah. Okay. I think the speed of the planter thing was such a draw at the beginning when it first came out. And now it's like the third or fourth thing that guys look at when they're looking at buying that planter. There's a lot more to it than speed. And I think that was kind of the big selling point. Look how fast you can go. But now it's emergence and, singularity and all those different things that start playing into it. Those are way more important than the speed, I think.
Yeah, I would agree. I think that's where the key is, and just how well that places the seed in the ground, and your singulation is so much better even at a high speed than you would be at a normal speed with a regular, vacuum planter.
Right. Yep. Okay, so now let's jump over. Do you have a lot of precision pressure where you're at?
We do, but we also sell some precision products as well through a secondary market. But mm-hmm. We do, being Tremont's real close. Tremont's actually in our area of responsibility. But it's one of those things you learn how to work around and work through. There's going to be people who want precision equipment. There's going to be people who want John Deere equipment, and you just try to give them the best and the most honest and transparent recommendations for what's right for them.
Yep.
And last I saw, I think precision equipment goes on a lot of John Deere, pre-owned equipment, and so we'll try to trade for that as well and sell it. I think it's a proven product. Is it the same quality as John Deere? It's argumentative, but it's one of those things that I would say we're gonna be open to either John Deere or Precision if it does come on a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, I just the reason I asked that question, I mean, we're the same way. We have some Precision parts that we sell as well, and we've got a fair amount of mom and pop type planter guys that are building some bars and stuff out there for guys, but. When I look at a lot of those, I'm really interested to see how those parts are going to start interacting when they start looking at some auction values or you start looking at some trading values of, like we talked about 1,000 times, you and I, the stuff that you bolt on doesn't have the same intrinsic value as something that's just part of the machine when it's when it's sold new, right?
So absolutely.
I'm kind of watching that precision stuff right now, trying to get a feel for where that used market is. And from the best I can tell, that there is a pretty significant drop off in value from what it costs new to where it is 1 or 2 years old. So are you seeing anything similar to that?
Yeah, we do, and yeah. That's the thing. It all depends on the person who ends up being the end user. You might get a person who's been precision before that values that a little bit differently. But in general, if it goes through the auction market, there is a lot more of a drop off than, let's say, just a genuine John Deere ExactEmerge.
Yeah. It's like planters. Their fingerprint. Everyone's different, and I think that's what you run into with the precision side of the business is that one guy wants X, the other guy wants Y, and the planter you got's got X on it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's kind of back and forth. It's just the same way. you know, our planters for the most part have a pretty, there's a few standard points that they all have, you know, and that's a purifier system of some kind or something like that. That's pretty standard across our AOR. But there is a few oddball things that pop up once in a while, and those oddball things that pop up once, they're just, we can't really value them for very much, because the next guy that is obviously either going to take it off or not want it, or he's going to discount the price of the machine because he's got to do something or whatever else. So is that?
Agree with you completely there. Yeah. We look at the same way, you know, and that's, you're right. You know, the planner is pretty much the fingerprint of the person. It's whatever they want. And, yeah. Not you know, hardly or anybody the same. You might get some small pockets here or there, but you know, there's so many differences or variations you can do to a planter that, you know, it has to. That's why I like the Exact Emerge, is that it pretty much, it's high speed, it's that way from the factory, it has the options on that the customer got from the factory, and they seem to be just a little bit, they sell better because of that.
I think so. I think you're right. I mean, it's just something, because you can't take it off, right? So it has to have it on there for the planter to work. So it makes a big difference, in my opinion, to do what it needs to. Let's jump over and talk about combines here a little bit. That is, you know, if you're in used equipment at all, combines are the thing that just never go away, right? It's that stray dog that just won't go away. You know what I mean? That's the best way to put it. So you take a look at the combine market, I feel like there's some strength there, but to me it's more in that 3-year-old to new range. I think that's where a lot of my play is coming from. What do you guys seeing for used combine market, and how do you see it working out for you guys there in Illinois?
Yeah, you know, we talked about that a little earlier, that, you know, our combine inventory is a little bit higher now than it has been in years past. That's signs to that better, you know, maybe that our economy is getting a little bit healthier, our farm economy is getting a little bit healthier, and guys who maybe hadn't bought machines the last few years are deciding to buy some machines again. You know, as far as the use side, I would say that our 1-, 2-, 3-year-old machines are fairly popular, and you know, we actually have some 1-year-old machines now that to sell. Where in the past we just didn't sell enough new to have some of that carry into the season or in the next season. So I still think there's a pretty decent market for that midlife machine too, if it's the right hours. Now, if it's not the right hours, it's a little bit higher hour, like maybe you would see out there on, you know, maybe a combine goes through the wheat run or some sort of custom run. I could see where that could be a little bit of a challenge, but you know, we'll have some mid-year combines with some lower hours that still are pretty popular machines. You know, you have 14, 15, you know, model machine, if it's got low hours, it's a pretty popular machine.
Yep. Seems like for us that 15 model is kind of the cutoff. You know, I mean, you get, you start looking at machines that got 2,000, 2,500 separator hours on them, those kind of things. That's when you really start kind of running into the, I don't know who the next buyer is. And oddly enough, the Mexican market has actually been quite open to S-Series combines with those kind of hours on them that they can buy in that $125,000 to $130,000 range. You seen anything like that in your neck of the woods?
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, back when you and I were used equipment, you know, guys back, you know, a few moons ago, that was the, you know, 2008, 2009 STS combine. Yeah. It's really pretty much the same machine. It's just, you know, it's a different, you know, a different model and a little different machine. But, you know, it's pretty much from a year and a price standpoint, that's that market.
Yeah. Yep, and that's the one thing too. You know, the 9770 guys are looking at, you know, there's Mexicans that are looking for those, buyers that are looking for those as well. We've seen them come up and talk to us about that a lot as well. So that kind of gives you an idea that 10 to 15 year old kind of window that those buyers are looking for. I mean, it's starting to kind of ring true when you start looking at maybe some 2012 model machines. You're getting pretty close to that 10 year old time frame, but also price is driving it too. Are you doing anything different right now as far as the number, we start looking at your used combine market? Are you doing anything different now than you were last year? I mean, are you looking at things different? Are there some different avenues you're looking at?
We do. We're just a lot more proactive now than we have been in the past. You know, we're identifying the machines that maybe we have a little bit more risk than we maybe had in the past, and looking at those right now and saying, okay, let's start to execute a plan today, March 15th, instead of waiting till August 15th or July 15th. You know, and just try to be more proactive with the situation. And number one part of a plan is identification. Right. You know, you can identify earlier and start to build a plan earlier and start to execute on a plan earlier. You're probably more likely to be in a better position.
Yeah, that's what we started doing more than anything now is we're looking at every Monday, me and my team are looking at 3 months out and 6 months out, what do we need for used equipment, and then trying to fill those gaps, obviously, from inside our AOR as much as we can, and go out and target those machines that we need to fill those gaps with new ones, and that's kind of what we're trying to do. So I think it's going to pay off, like you said, being proactive, being less reactive. We're really good about knowing what we need to have about halfway through the selling cycle, and then, and then when we finally get it, that selling cycle's done, and we wonder why we got something that's been sitting around forever. I think we're looking at stuff a lot different now than we have in the past, just to be, like you said, proactive, using a lot of EDA data and other avenues of data that we can come up with to really help drive that proactiveness when we're looking at our used inventory. So there's got to be a better way to manage your inventory. Always trying to find that. When you look at your row crop market right now, where do you think you have the highest return at right now? Is it the row crop tractor, or is it four-wheel drive tractors, or what is it that you see as a big push for you?
Yeah, for us, it's a row crop tractor. Probably the biggest thing, though, we just don't have a lot of row crop inventory. I'd love to have some more. We might have to go out and go on the market and get some more, just for the fact that we've sold a lot of machines in the last a lot of tractors the last few years. We had a lot of guys who maybe during the kind of the down might have downscaled a little bit with their tractor inventory and said, well, we can go with a tractor less or a couple tractors less, and now feel a little bit stronger, they're feeling a little bit healthier, and they want to buy a machine back. And so we've sold a lot of outright deals in the last 4 to 5 months on tractors, and that's kind of showing in our row crop used inventory. Another thing is when we do get a trade, let's say it's a pre-DAF 8R, or it's a late model 30 series. Those things are sold. The demand for those tractors are very high, and we just don't see a lot of them hitting the lot ever. Yeah. They're sold before they hit the lot. So, with that being said, it's really good for our tractor inventory. It's healthy. It turns quick.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd like to have maybe a little bit more inventory.
Yeah, and we're kind of the same way. You know, the 30 series tractor, pretty much irregardless of hours, is something that guys are looking for. Kind of back to our earlier conversation of that backup tractor and what that looks like. So we'll get a 5 or 6 thousand hour 30 series tractor come in, and somebody will come buy that, and it's all price driven, right? And there's not some huge demand for overpaying on 30 series tractors, but it's a price driven market. You know, it's a price rig now. It's not a benefit rig. It's a price rig. So
yeah,
we're starting to see that too. Kind of the same way, we could probably use a few more 8Rs or something like that to fill some gaps.
The exciting thing for us though is that, in the past we had a good supply of, 1 year old low houred 8Rs. Those are for the most part gone.
Right.
So what we've been able to do is fill that gap with some new tractors too, and really some guys, some farmers, producers that, in the past had always bought maybe their tractors new.
Right.
And when we hit the hyperinflation era of used equipment, they started buying the 1 year old used because they were available, they were plentiful, they weren't too far off of the new price, and started buying used. Well, so we moved some of those guys back into new equipment, and there's nothing better than if you can get a traditional producer to buy a new tractor. It's it's something that I think they'll benefit from in the long term too. And we'd like to sell new equipment whenever we can. And it's one of those things that I think you'll see. We see more of those people starting to look. Well, if you don't have that used machine, what do you have for new? So we have a good selection of new tractors as well we can sell.
Yeah, we're seeing the same thing. It's kind of a it's really funny how everybody wants to take a look at their area and say, oh, we're different than everybody else, but in grand scheme, really everyone's pretty much the same. I mean,
for sure.
You might be able to have something. You might have a rig out there somewhere that is a specialty thing that is kind of to your area, but 90% of what you do is North American wide, man. Whether it's Canada or the U.S., doesn't really matter. It's going to be about the same.
Yep, I agree.
Okay. All right, man. So let's take a look at what you see happening here going into kind of the rest of the year, kind of through planting season into harvest. So
yeah.
what's your feel for the overall economy, and how do you see things shaping up?
Well, you know.
And if you know the answer to this, John, I'm going to go out
I'm going to give you a plug right here, okay? I'm going to give Movement Iron Podcast a plug, because you're talking to a lot of people. I mean, whether you're a farmer, whether you're ag service provider or equipment dealer, seed dealer, we all have a lot of risk in agriculture today, especially with the dynamics we're facing with trade, with weather, with markets, and nothing's cheap, whether whoever you are in ag. It's all rather. We all have a lot of risk.
Right.
So, you know, being able to listen to podcasts like yours, talk to different people in the market, it's able to help us all. Understand where we need to position ourselves. If I had the answer, I definitely wouldn't probably tell you, because I'd keep that to myself. But you know, it's one of those things that we're in for a very memorable 2019. I mean, well, we won't forget, just because there's so many more dynamics we've never seen before. You know, we have trade, we have weather impacts. There's just a lot of stuff that's going to affect our market and affect our customers' markets that we just need to stay ahead of, try to understand the trends, and position ourselves to be the best we can. We're kind of like that farmer that doesn't know whether to plant corn or soybeans. We're going to wait and see.
Right.
We're going to be aggressive, and I think everybody that wants to be in a business is going to be aggressive. But yet we're going to have all our options weighed out in front of us, and when it's time to act, we're going to act quick.
Yeah, and that's exactly what you have to do, man. Execute that plan. We talk about the commodity guys that got in here, whether it's Chip or whoever, talking about having a plan and sticking to that plan and moving forward. So there's going to be a, 2019, I think, is going to be that year we look back on and say, hey, you know what, this is where we turned. This was the turn in the economy, and this was the everything is coming back to the way it should be. We hit that bottom of the trough, and now we're coming back out. So I think we could see some climb in commodity prices this year, just because of, if the trade thing especially gets worked out, and especially if there is some plane delays or whatever, weather market some kind of comes around. So, you know, everybody wants a weather issue, just not on their farm. So it's one of those things where we're starting to see some of that stuff develop across the entire country, though. Some are worse than others, but it's a nationwide thing. So I'm looking forward to see how 19 works out and where that goes. And I think we're going to see some very positive things come out of the year.
Yeah. No, I would, like what I'll say, Case, and once again, your podcast is great. It helps out, you know, people like myself to sit there and say, okay, what are some of the resources that you pull together within this lesson and formulate our own plans. And that's a great advantage that we didn't have 5 years ago, 6 years ago. And it's nice to be able to have that as a resource.
Well, I appreciate that, John. And for those of you that are tuning in for the first time, John's been on my podcast probably 6-7 times. So he was the second guest on the Moving Iron podcast. So John's been a big supporter of this, and I appreciate that through the years, bud. All right. Let's see. All right. Well, let's shut it down here, John. So,
okay.
guys, we've been doing this for a little bit now, John, got a lot of conversation out there. If guys want to reach out and pick your brain or ask you a question or something like that, what would be the best way for them to do that?
You know what? You can find me on Twitter at jhawk8310r. That time, that was my favorite tractor, that 8310R. But probably had need to move it to a bigger model now, right, Case?
That's
but
right,
Jay Hawkins 8310R is a good place. You can instant message me there. Also, Jay Hawkins at martinsullivan.com. You can also email me if you want as well.
Right on. Well, John, it's great to have you on here. And you've been a good friend over the years, and I look forward to working with you for many more. And until the next time, have a good one, buddy.
Thanks. See you, Case. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this edition of the Moving Iron Podcast, now part of the Global Ag Network. If you'd like to continue any of these conversations, you can hit me up on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram at Moving Iron LLC. You can also send me an email at Moving Iron Podcast at MovingIronPodcast.com. You can also visit the Moving Iron Podcast YouTube channel and watch Market Roundup with Chip Mellinger, Sean Hackett, and Angie Setzer. Also, Tax News with Glenn Birnbaum. Please visit MovingIronLLC.com. Here you can find information, details, and updates for the 2019 Moving Iron Summit in Nashville, Tennessee. If you'd like to support the podcast, you can leave a review and subscribe at iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, SoundCloud, and GlobalAgNetwork.com. So until next time, let's go move some iron. This is Casey Seymour. Out.
Moving iron in the 21st century. Hardworking people working hard for you and me. Moving iron time and time again. Through the years you'll find us here. Moving